Mind Shift, exploring the unexplained on News Talk 1010 CFRB and Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800. If you're just joining Nikki and I, welcome. I being Errol Bruce Knapp and she being...
Nikki.
There you go.
Hi, Montreal.
Hey, yes, bienvenue. Good to have you with us. And Jim Pacheco doing things technical in Montreal. And Big Daddy B here in Toronto. That's Bida Sige is the name. Big Daddy B is easier, though, isn't it?
Oh, I like the name Big Daddy B.
You like the name Big Daddy B.
I sure do.
See, so there's 35 seconds on our new op there. Dean Guilandi, I think Big Daddy is writing the exam tonight for Saturday Night Operators. So,
oh well, good luck.
Mm-hmm. Well, Big it's Daddy. Going pretty damn good so far.
It sure has.
And it sure
I predict
has.
He'll do well.
You know, we have talked on occasion about the Holy Grail here, and we have had relatively uninformed discussions about what it could be, whether it's the chalice from the palace or if it's as it is. Suggested in Holy Blood, the book Holy Blood, Holy Grail, which I know a lot of people who listen to this program have read. It's a book that's been out there for at least 10, 15, maybe even more, 20 years, and still sells pretty darn well. There's a book coming up for release in the fall, and our next guest is its author. Joining us on the line is the author, along with Joël L'Oréal, of Swords at Sunset, The Last Stand of North America's Grail Knights. Now, you know, I mean, who'd have thunk that the Grail Knights would have ended up in North America, not only in North America, but in Canada. And this is the subject of Michael Bradley's book, Swords at Sunset. And Michael Bradley joins us on the phone. Good evening, Michael.
Good evening, Errol and Nikki.
Good evening, Michael.
I trust that you're rested and can handle the next hour on Mind Shift.
I hope so.
I hope so, too. How my. The Holy Grail has been the Holy Grail for many, 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 many years. There have been, the Knights Templar went looking for the Holy Grail. There have been all kinds of theories about where it is and what it is. And
no, they didn't. The Knights Templar guarded the Holy Grail.
Yeah. Well, yes.
They didn't go looking for it.
No.
They knew where it was.
They knew where the Holy Grail was. Okay.
And they knew what it was.
And they knew what it was, which is more important. I mean, it helps to know what it is that,
yes.
that you're looking after. Can you take us back a little bit, just in a few moments, and give us a backgrounder on what you consider to be, or what is considered to be, the Holy Grail?
Well, I think Dan Brown did this quite well in the Da Vinci Code, basically the medieval legend of the Holy Grail was as follows, that Jesus and Mary Magdalene were married. They had children, and those children married other people, and they had children. And so the Holy Grail was basically a bloodline. In French, the words Holy Grail are still spelled Saint Graal, which is just a pun on two other French words, Saint, S-A-N-G, Real, Saint Real, pardon any French listeners out there, and that means Holy Blood. So the Holy Grail is the Holy Blood.
Okay, so is this why the Knights Templar were outlawed by the Roman Church?
Absolutely, in the year 1313, 1607.
Okay, so because the Knights Templar knew that the secret that was that Jesus didn't die on the cross.
No, he may or may not have died on the cross. We don't know about that.
Uh-huh.
What we do know is that the belief was that Jesus and Mary Magdalene had descendants, whether or not he died on the cross. And these descendants were still alive in 1307.
So the secret that the Knights Templar protected, and that presumably the Scottish Rite of Masonry is founded around, the secret is that there's this bloodline that exists to this day.
I don't know about that. I will tell you the following thing, that Scottish Rite Masonry, what you call Scottish Rite Masonry, the hereditary head of it was Henry de St. Clair, Henry Sinclair in English,
mm-hmm.
and he led an expedition across the Atlantic in 1398 to basically get rid of excess Templars, or by then Templar descendants, who were in Scotland and who were an embarrassment to him and to everybody else, not because they didn't respect them, but because they were a pretext for a crusade against Scotland. So he went across the Atlantic to transplant them somewhere else, almost anywhere else besides Rosslyn in Scotland, which was his domain.
Rosslyn in Scotland.
Rosslyn. And if you read down Dan Brown's The Da Vinci Code, we go from there to the aforementioned Rosslyn, and we find the descendants of Jesus there. Actually, this is a little bit oversimplified.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, let's take it at face value and have a laugh. The basic thing is that there were 500 ex-Templar descendants at Rosslyn, which is just outside of Glasgow in Scotland,
mm-hmm.
and they existed as a kind of embarrassment and also as a pretext for invasion of Scotland. So Henry Sinclair got rid of them.
So he had them shipped across the Atlantic?
No, he didn't have them shipped. He went with them.
Uh-huh.
In his
he led them.
He led them in 13 ships
mm-hmm.
in the year 1398, and they landed, as far as we can tell, by a document called the Zeno Narrative, which is accepted by historians. He landed in Nova Scotia. The reason we know that is that the description of the geography that he supplies in the Zeno Narrative matches Nova Scotia like a glove. And not only that, there's other evidence too, which was just discovered between 1991 and 1995 by the Royal Nova Scotia Museum. However, when I wrote my book, A Holy Grail Across the Atlantic, the first of three, they ridiculed this book while they had proof that it was true.
Hmm. So what was the proof that they found?
63 metal fragments, which resolved themselves into between 6 and 13 pots, of which 2 were virtually complete. And they were analyzed by the slowpoke reactor at the University of Toronto, and they resolved themselves, as I say, into between 6 and 13 metal pots from Northwest Europe, probably Scotland, based on the impurities of the slowpoke reactor analysis. Now, this was the 63 metal fragments were found between 1991 and 1995 in three knick-knack Indian sites in Nova Scotia, one being Pictou, the other being Avonport, and the other being Northport. And this has never been released to the Canadian public, but it's available on the web if you're pretty good at surfing.
Mm-hmm.
You have to be really good at surfing.
So,
because I'll tell you why. It's printed up in the 33rd International Symposium on Archaeometry, sponsored by the National Museum of Hungary, held in Budapest in May 1999, and it's published in 400 copies in Hungarian. So nobody can say that they're hiding anything from the Canadian public.
Yeah, we need to take a break, Michael Bradley. This is fascinating stuff, and I want to come back and just pick up on those pots again, dating to back to presumably around the late 1400s. So there you go. Michael Bradley is our guest. Swords at Sunset. Michael's website, all one word, Michael Bradley. That's Michael, the way one would spell it. And Bradley, BRADLEY.info. MichaelBradley.info. And we shall continue on with Michael Bradley and Swords at Sunset, the story of the last stand of North America's Grail Knights and the Holy Grail in Canada. On News Talk 1010 CFRB and Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800, Nikki and myself, Errol Bruce Knapp. This is
The Mind Shift.
Mind Shift, exploring the unexplained on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800, and News Talk 1010 CFRB here in Toronto. I'm Errol Bruce Knapp. My co-host is Nikki. Our guest this hour is the author of Swords at Sunset, Michael Bradley, the book he wrote with Joelle L'Oréal. Michael Bradley, when does your book hit the stands?
It's coming out this fall, probably around the end of September or October.
And there is the chapter one is available online for those people who would like to go read it.
Not only that, the end of the book is online as well,
uh-huh.
The epilogue. So you can read chapter one and the epilogue. So you can get a pretty good idea of the book.
MichaelBradley.info is the address. Michael Bradley, all one word, .info. The metal fragments, they dated back to 1400. But when Sinclair brought his crowd over, what, in 1398? So
yeah, 2 years difference.
2 years difference.
Yeah, well, so
that's not bad, though, is it? I mean,
oh, it's not bad. I'll remember that the Royal Nova Scotia Museum dated the metal fragments initially by the strata they were in, i.e. soil accumulation.
Mm-hmm.
So we got 2 years going for us. Big deal. I'll bet on that any time.
Now, Sinclair and the 500, did they stay on the East Coast?
No, they didn't. There's various accounts. What they did, though, was they went inland as fast as they could along five major river routes. That's the subject of my second book, Grail Knights of North America, published 10 years after the first. And it traces their progress toward the Great Lakes by 23, I think, artifacts of the Grail era directly connected with believers in the Holy Grail. They were looking for metal with which to sustain their European lifestyle and, of course, the metallic heartland of North America is the Great Lakes. There's copper there in the form of native copper nuggets, and there's also iron deposits close to the surface that they could reach with their medieval technology.
Hmm. So, how long did it take them to get from the East Coast to the Great Lakes?
About 25, 30 years. Because remember, the Mi'kmaq Indians of Nova Scotia also had samples of the copper nuggets and samples of the iron ore. And I'm quite sure that the Grail refugees, as I like to call them, were not unimpressed by this. So they headed inland along five major river routes, and you can trail them that way. They established the first inland settlement of their people by Lake Memphremagog in Quebec, which is on the Quebec-Vermont border. The lake's long and thin, goes north to south, and the southern end is in Vermont, the northern end is in Quebec. And on the western side of Lake Memphremagog, we have all sorts of things, including a dam that's 60 feet long that was carbon dated by accredited Quebec archaeologists by surveyor stakes driven behind the dam, hemlock wood in this case, at 1500 plus or minus. So that was before any known explorers were supposed to be here. In the same stream that the dam's on, there's a beautiful gargoyle, which I do reproduce in a photographic illustration. in Grail Knights of North America, that is also dated to about the same time, but by artistic experts who credit this gargoyle sculpture with being of the same style as in Rosslyn in Scotland and in the monastery of Léry in the Morbihan province of France.
Hmm. So wherever these people settled, there is still evidence, or there has been recently unearthed evidence of their stay there.
Absolutely. I mean, there's no doubt of it. The dam itself, as I say, was excavated by accredited Quebec provincial archaeologists. And we get the carbon date, again, from Isotech Labs and the University of Toronto, 1,500 plus or minus, about 25, 30 years.
Amazing. We need to break, Michael Bradley, for the latest headlines from the newsrooms, but this is fascinating stuff. And of course, all of this is not official history. It's something that needs to be unearthed by people like Michael Bradley. Swords at Sunset is the book written with Joël L'Oréal, The Last Stand of North America's Grail Knights. We'll break and we shall return, Nikki and I. You're tuned to Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800. And News Talk 1010 CFRB in Toronto. It's 9:30, out to the newsroom for the headlines. Hey, Bob Komsic, what's happening? Mind Shift, exploring the unexplained. On Montreal's News Talk leader, CJAD 800 and News Talk 1010 CFRB in Toronto. Nikki in studio with me, as usual. My name, well, I'm Errol Bruce Knapp. On the phone with us is Michael Bradley, the author of Swords at Sunset, The Last Stand of North America's Grail Knights. So we end up headed along the various rivers with signs that Western Europe, Northwestern Europeans have been there in the 14 and 1500s. Where do we end up with all of this, Michael Bradley?
Okay, well, what happened was around 1425 to 1450, according to the artifacts I found, they first of all established the settlement I told you about on Lake Memphremagog in Quebec, Vermont border. But then after they had discovered Lake Ontario, it didn't take them long to discover Niagara Falls. And they knew, like the Americans knew, and also LaSalle, that they had to establish a settlement above Niagara Falls in order to explore the whole continent, the interior of it, via the upper Great Lakes. So for 5 years, I was searching for their settlement above the falls.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this, and we've excavated quite a few artifacts from there, which are all late medieval European in provenance. And that's basically it. So now I know where they settled and what happened.
Do we have a rough idea of when it was that they settled on the Niagara Escarpment?
It must have been sometime around, I would say, 1450, by the age of the artifacts. Now, what happened was, for a long time, they tried to live or coexist with the rising power of the Iroquois Confederacy. In 1536, roughly, there was a treaty between them and the Iroquois, and they were confined to the Canadian side of the Niagara River. But this didn't last long. Well, it lasted for 30 or 40 years. And in 1571, that community was wiped out by the Seneca Iroquois in the west, let's say. And the same year, roughly, the Mohawks, the easternmost of the Iroquois, wiped out the settlement at Lake Memphremagog. Again, that comes from dating of artifacts.
Now, were there any survivors from that initial Henry Sinclair 500 that came across in 1398?
Well, there were survivors. We're talking 174 years here.
Mm-hmm.
These people of the 500 that came with Henry Sinclair in 1398, they had 174 years to interbreed, and mostly with Indians, and to gather a population, which I've estimated by actuarial statistics, it being around 10,000 people, spread from Niagara Falls, or the escarpment anyway, to Lake Memphremagog down to Nova Scotia.
So what you have potentially is 10,000 descendants from Jesus' bloodline.
Well, I don't think they all were descendants from Jesus' bloodline. I think there may have been 5 or 10% of that who
that's,
were.
That's still 1,000 people.
That may be, over 174 years, yes.
Okay, so then you take, it's like, you know, you tell two people and they tell two people and they tell two people. So your thousand could, provided everybody survived, or at least a couple of couples survived, would reach down into modern day southern Ontario.
Absolutely.
And how would one know if they were a descendant of Jesus Christ?
Well, I know one. I don't know if anybody else does.
You know one. And where is this person?
Sitting beside me, actually, on the floor, with her bosom quite visible.
And you would be talking about Joëlle L'Oréal.
I would indeed. Mm-hmm. Her name means halo in English. And if you read the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, which you alluded to at the beginning of the program, which, by the way, was published in 1982.
Thank you.
Which is by now, I don't know, what, 23 years ago?
23 years ago.
Yeah, exactly.
Makes me feel old.
Yeah, well, it makes me feel old. Imagine me, yes. Her genealogy is in the Holy Blood and the Holy Grail, page 146.
146 of Holy Blood, Holy Grail. So, you said that
there were
the two communities basically were wiped out, but there were survivors, and your wife Joëlle L'Oréal is evidence of that.
No, she wasn't a survivor.
She's a survivor of the part of the bloodline that survived in North America.
No, not North America.
Ah.
My wife was born in France.
Oh, okay.
And along the Garonne River, where the original bloodline settled, and which gave rise to a number of people.
Is that in southern France?
Oh, yes.
That's where one of the twelve tribes of Israel settled. They were ostracized, and I forget which tribe it was.
I don't think I want to go there.
Okay.
Because I think that's all myth.
All right.
Now, Michael, what is your opinion of the Passion of the Christ?
What do you mean by that? The Passion of the Christ.
The movie, The Passion of the Christ.
I never saw it.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Is this a Mel Gibson movie?
Yes. Yeah,
that's the one.
No, I never saw it. I just saw the trailers on TV.
Mm-hmm. So, in modern terms, where does that leave us now, this Holy Grail, this bloodline of Jesus?
All right. I think it leaves us in a very important place. The Holy Grail has always been in conflict with Orthodox Judaism, Judeo-Christianity, and what I'll call Judeo-Islam, because Islam is firmly based on Judaism. And the Holy Grail was basically the Western European idea of how society should be. It was not very aggressive, considering the rest of Western history. It was very much pro-feminist in that they allowed female input not only in society but in the divinity. And this is all at odds with Middle Eastern religion, whether it's Judeo-Christianity, whether it's Judaism, whether it's Judeo-Islam. As we know, they're not very pro-feminist. They're highly aggressive, et cetera, et cetera. Now, that's why the Grail has always been in conflict with Orthodox religion as it's come to be imposed upon most of Europe and most of North America.
Well, let's think about that for a moment or three. We'll take a break here. Our guest is Michael Bradley, michaelbradley.info. You can go read the first chapter of Swords at Sunset, The Last Stand of North America's Grail Knights there, as well as the epilogue. It's fascinating stuff, you know. It's not a part of our official history, is it?
No, it isn't.
But the evidence is there. Now, why would they deny the official history and not pay any attention at all to that? It's a mystery to me. It's a mind shift. That's the name of the program. Nikki sitting in studio with me, my co-host, Errol Brewsnap is my name. We will break and we shall return on Montreal's News Talk Leader, CJAD 800 and News Talk 1010 CFRB here in Toronto. This is
Mind Shift.
Mind Shift, exploring the unexplained on News Talk 1010 CFRB and Montreal's News Talk Leader CJAD 800. Our email address is mindshift@virtuallystrange.net. Feel free to use it, mindshift@virtuallystrange.net. strange.net. My co-host is Nikki. On the phone with us is Michael Bradley, author of Swords at Sunset, The Last Stand of North America's Grail Knights, as in Holy Grail, as in Sang Royal, the royal blood, the bloodline of Jesus. And that's what it is. It ain't the chalice from the palace with the brew that is true. It is a bloodline. And lots of historical evidence that suggests that Canada has been very much a part of the Holy Grail since the very late 1300s on, to a point where a community of the Holy Grail, the bloodline, ended up on the Niagara Escarpment. There was a community there, much physical and archaeological evidence of that. Michael Bradley?
Yes.
I
would say also, I wanted to say that the book is coming out in French by Editions Courteau, Louise Courteau Editrice, as soon as Joel can translate it from English to French.
Michael, can Nikki have a quick word with Joel?
Of course, Nikki can have a quick word with Joel. Just hold on.
Thank you.
Hello, Nikki.
Hello, Joel. Parlez-vous français?
Bien sûr.
Bien sûr. Certainement.
Yes. Now, Joel, this is fascinating. I was telling Errol, very fascinating stuff. But I want to ask you, do you have any recollection or dreams or anything like that that would put you, would be, I'm sure you are, an ancestor of Jesus Christ? Is there anything there that you can tell me or tell the people out there that makes you feel like that? Or have you had any recollections or anything like that?
I have to explain, Joelle, if you haven't talked or heard of Nikki before, that Nikki is a clairvoyant, and so that's where that question comes from. You know, she gets feelings, and she hears things. She's clairaudient. So she's one, I'll step out now and let you answer the question.
Well, not really, except for the strange circumstances in which I met Michael. Michael had actually advertised for a companion, and I became aware of that through a very strange circumstances. I was at the time a member of the Rosicrucian Order, as well as a Mormon, and it came to pass that for some weird reason, Michael had placed his advertisement in Toronto, and I became aware, or was made aware of it, when I was in Ottawa, and there was no way that his advertisement could have made it there. So it was one of those strange circumstances, and I knew that I had to contact him, and he knew that I we had to get together, and basically...
That's wonderful.
Yes, indeed.
Wow. That's really strange synchronicity, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yes. And we talk about synchronicity often on this program, but it's amazing when it... I love magic. It's what it comes down
well,
to.
Well, that is the Grail in action.
Yes.
I've come to see it over and over again.
And I wish we had more time to get into what you have seen come over and over again, but a fascinating addition to our discussion with Michael, and merci bien, Joël.
Okay. Back to Michael?
Thank you. Yes, please.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Hello,
Michael. Well,
hi, Bruce.
that's an interesting, isn't it? Wow.
Well, it is. Actually, this letter came to me with a blood-red Templar cross on the stationery.
The rosy cross, huh?
Well, I don't know if it's rosy or not. It was certainly... it wasn't discreet, let's put it that way.
Yeah, I was referring to Joel being a Rosicrucian at
well,
one time.
Well, I didn't know all that.
No, you didn't. But
no,
that,
and I didn't care either. And, I only...